We start today, though, with the art of photographing abandoned structures. I'm talking home, prisons, plants, churches, and even schools. Matthew Christopher has spent the past decade documenting the ruins of our civilization that you can now see in his new book, Abandoned America, The Age of Consequences. The Philadelphia photographer catalogs these abandoned structures in pictures and words. The result is a haunting beauty. And I've got to say, these photographs are absolutely stunning, and Matthew will be showing some during his presentation tonight at the Kansas City Public Library. That'll be at 6:30. I'll talk about more of that in just a little while. And Matthew, welcome. So nice to have you here.
Oh, thanks so much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you say in here that you became obsessed with shooting abandoned buildings. I'm wondering why. I mean, what is it about abandoned, decaying structures that grabs you as hard as it did?
Well, I started working in the mental health field when I graduated from college, and I got very interested because I was working in adult inpatient care and locked wards. I got interested in the asylum system, which has a pretty dark and lurid background. And so the more I read about that, the more I was told about one in particular, Philadelphia State Hospital, or Byberry, that was not too far away from where I was working. There were people that were staff that I worked with or patients that I worked with that had been there. And so this place had been, I think this would have been about 2000, 2001, and it had been abandoned for several years at this point. And so I got interested in going to see it. And basically, that's what I did. I went out and visited it, and it was kind of a very life-changing experience. I mean, you know, seeing something like that firsthand versus reading about it, it was 160 acres, 40-plus buildings, or miles of underground tunnels.
And the doors were just open? You could just walk in and walk around?
More or less, yeah. I mean, and that was a very sort of infamous place historically. When you look at the pictures of it, there was an expose that had been done not too long after World War II, and it where somebody had basically taken pictures of the ward conditions, and they really weren't terribly far from a lot of concentration camp images. I mean, you could put them side by side and I think have a difficult time. And this was part of the reason why it was so shocking to American people to see that people were in those conditions in America. So to go to a building with that sort of weighty history behind it and see the actual reality of it, I think really changed my life a lot. And then
it changes your life. Why, Matthew? What's grabbing you about it so much that you're being transformed?
Well, I think that it's the idea of seeing that there's reality to a certain thing. You can read about something in a book, but seeing it as an actual physical, tangible object that you can walk through and see pieces of its story, you never really find the whole thing. I mean, I think that that gives you a sense of a place that maybe just reading about it or being told about it doesn't. And so bringing that back to the asylum system as a whole, you know, state hospitals are getting torn down left and right.
Right.
And I think there's going to be a point where all we have is kind of the House of Horrors media portrayal of them now and not the reality of what they actually were. So,
and the reality of what they were is something different than that horror, then, you're saying?
I think so. I think it's a very multifaceted thing. I mean, that's certainly a part of it. I mean, you know, if you look at the pictures of Byberry, for example, in that period, I think it would be hard to call it anything different. But they were founded with a lot of idealism, ambition. They're beautiful structures.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that worked there that really cared about the people and wanted to help them and just didn't have the resources. That's something that I love, and I could talk quite a bit about the history of it. But seeing that and seeing that that was vanishing and that the reality of the places, I think, was going to be something that just fades into myth.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, once I sort of got interested in that, it just mushroomed out into an obsession, and I started going to schools and churches and factories and anything else that I could find.
You find these places how?
There's three main ways that I find them. I would say I do a lot of research. There's networking. I work with tons of different groups, such as preservation societies, all the way to salvage companies or demolition companies at times will let me into photograph places because they kind of understand that there's an inherent value to documenting the places. And then sometimes it's just dumb luck. There are places that we had been talking before the show about an elk lodge that I visited, and that was just something that I happened to be going through the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And you just stumbled across it, and it became the cover for your book, Abandon America, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what caught you about this place?
Well, I didn't know what it was. It was a very kind of ominous building. It was the doors were wide open. It was falling apart and very creepy inside. I haven't really been in a building like that. And then afterwards, and that's another thing. I mean, I don't necessarily always. I like to research a building before I go to photograph it. But in a case like that, you know, you kind of find the place and then afterwards piece together what it was. So I had no idea about Elks Lodges and that they were kind of the group of vaudeville performers, and that's their particular, you know, and you think about it now, how many vaudeville performers do you know? So mm-hmm. That's why you don't really see Elks Lodges flourishing in the communities. But once again, that's a sort of a piece of American history that is all but vanished. So I think that's kind of what catches me, is this idea of buildings that are in transition, that are kind of on their way to either another life or being repurposed or just vanishing altogether.
So you find these places, and you talked about the creepy factor here. What is the creepy factor? Because you're walking around by yourself, you wonder what's going to be around the next corner. It's got to be a little bit weird.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because a lot of times people will ask me about, you know, are they haunted? Do you see ghosts? I'm not really into the paranormal aspect. I hate to be boring about it, but I've never seen anything that was inexplicable in a place, and
Shoot.
I don't really buy. Yeah, I know, right? I wish I had a good story that I could make up to sell the places. But I mean, I think the creepiness of the buildings is actually, for example, if you think about the state hospitals, the idea of the history of it, and that there were people that were incarcerated oftentimes for their whole lifetimes that maybe died of neglect. I mean, these are very real stories of people that got put in for a myriad of reasons that oftentimes had very little to do with actually even being mentally ill. Along those lines, certain other things that I think really kind of do creep me out about the buildings are structural instability would be the big one, falling through
say,
a floor.
In the first place you went to it, that's the place that's on the cover of your book, your foot went through the floor, right?
Yes, it did. It did, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a little scary.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
a lot scary.
Yeah, I've had that happen a few different places.
And, really? And you keep going back.
Yeah, thank God it wasn't more. I mean, you have to be very careful with that stuff. There are people that many people actually that have died from that. In fact, with Philadelphia State Hospital, when they were demolishing it, a contractor fell through one of the concrete stairwells and died. And you don't even think of concrete necessarily as being as something that would be as unstable as like wood,
yeah, right,
or something like that. But yeah, it's that would be the big thing is going through a floor. But also there's a number of other things I think that people don't necessarily think about. And that's they often have a lot of really toxic substances like asbestos and mold and lead paint. And if you go into a power plant, they probably have PCBs and mercury and many, many other things. So the real world stuff, I think, is so creepy that often I don't need to embellish it with, the ghost stories.
You know, Matthew Christopher's website, if you want to take a look as you're listening to the show, perhaps at some of his photographs, and you really ought to do this, it's abandonamerica.us is his website. Great photographs there. You can see what we're talking about here. And we're looking for your recommendations for abandoned buildings around the Kansas City metro that maybe that tells the story of your community, and buildings that maybe ought to be photographed before too much more time goes by. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. My former colleague from the Star, Kevin Collison, sent over several ideas. For starters, the GM Leeds plant, the Bannister complex, which is a good one, with Cerner going in there, the Mark Twain building, the Pickwick complex, Indian Springs Mall, and KCK EPA building. Did you bring your camera, Matthew?
Oh, of course I did.
You shoot some of these buildings right here in the Kansas City metro?
Absolutely. In fact, when I'm done with the show, I'll definitely take some notes and see about going and checking those out. That's phenomenally helpful.
Yeah. Well, I came across a really interesting quote from you that said that you don't get why people get excited about ancient artifacts, and yet they ignore existing structures that preserve, you know, our time from the last century. You described all this as a prevailing blindness. What bothers you so much about all that?
Well, I mean, I think probably my interest in this stemmed even as a kid. I always thought archaeology was wonderful, so I can completely understand where, you know, a Mayan ruin in the jungle would be something that would be fantastically exciting to find. And but the blindness, I suppose, is that we have these buildings in our midst, and oftentimes we kind of treat them like trash or like eyesores. And as you pointed out about talking about suggestions for buildings that tell the stories of the communities, they often are very integral parts of the communities. I mean, I grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and there was a time, I think it was about 2 years ago now, where they were demolishing the original Hershey factory. Now,
Right. They
had built a newer one that was, not terribly far away. And but basically, you know, this factory was what the whole town was built around. And I could tell you stories like that about all of these different places. I mean, if you look at the asylums, for example, often towns were built around them. But factories are certainly like that. And so, you know, these places kind of tell us about who we are, what our past is. And yet, people say, oh, well, that's blight. It should be torn down. And to some extent, I understand that it's unsustainable to keep it as a ruin, much as I like ruins as they are. But the idea of them being just garbage to be broken down and thrown in a landfill without a second thought is kind of terrible to me.
I really like this line from your book, and you write this, Matthew: buildings serve as a mirror in which the inhabitants see their own character reflected. They are built with meaning, used with purpose, and ultimately come to illustrate the spirit not only of their architects, but of those who live, love, work, and suffer within them. Even in their disuse, they are symbolic and show shifts in values, finances, and ambitions. I gather that's a mission statement of yours of a sort.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a really good quote to kind of sum up how I feel about places. I mean, if you look at somebody's home, for example, you start off with the building, and then you go in, and the more that, which by the way may mirror the community values, the time that it's in, the architect that creates it. I mean, there are all of these people that kind of go into that. I realize it sounds, maybe a little out there, but it's kind of their spirit, their soul or passion goes into this of the area, and then the person that actually inhabits it, they have the pieces of their lives, their sort of triumphs and tragedies, they have the items that they, I think the places that we inhabit really come to be mirrors of us. And so when you lose that, particularly with really important historical structures, I think you're losing a part of your identity. And one thing that I kind of think of with this is, for example, you think about where you went to school when you were a kid, and if you were to go back to that building, you would probably have all sorts of memories jarred loose that you would never have even thought of. This kid used to sit next to me in the class, and this teacher used to do this, and I remember there was this girl that I thought was really cute. And all of those things are there because of the tangible object. Mm-hmm. So once you lose that tangible object, you're really losing, in a way, a part of your identity in a very real form. So.
Matthew Christopher speaks at 6:30 tonight at the Plaza branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. To grab a seat, and you're going to enjoy seeing these images projected on a very big screen, go to kclibrary.org. That's 6:30 tonight, the Plaza branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. And again, we're looking for your recommendations for abandoned buildings in your community that maybe should be documented before it's too late. Maybe Matthew will come out later on this afternoon and shoot your recommendation for himself. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Paul from Kansas City, Missouri called to ask you this, Matthew. How does photographing abandoned churches, how has it affected you spiritually, or has it?
That's a really interesting question. I haven't had that one before. I mean, I think that the thing that's really interesting about an abandoned church and really sorrowful in a way is that, and I sort of take a look at it as somebody who is documenting. So it's you know, to me, if I were going to a mosque, a synagogue, a Catholic church, a Protestant church, it doesn't matter. They all have significance and importance to me. And I think that they are all representations of a link that we have with the divine, or an attempt to, you know, even in their architecture, and certainly there's a lot of artistry in them as well. So basically how that affects me personally, I guess, I think it's tremendously sad to see these places that often were built by immigrants and people invested a lot of effort and artistry into. And, you know, if you go into a Polish church, it's going to be radically different in the architecture and art than, say, a German church or an Irish church. And as far as the, you know, how I guess that affects me spiritually, I think that there's still something very special in those places. And I think that, you know, going in, they're still very peaceful. And if you were talking about the presence of a higher power, I think that's still there in a form, but it's the people. Yeah.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Mike from Lawrence. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a friend of mine who's a former KC resident, who's Osage Indian, and Pawhuska, Oklahoma is basically like a time capsule from the 20s and 30s when the Osages had all the oil mill money, and they built all these beautiful Art Deco buildings, a lot of which are abandoned now. But my friend's business, his retail business, is in the building that housed the first Mercedes-Benz dealership west of the Mississippi in the 20s. And it still had the functioning elevator in the back where they took the cars from the first to second floor. And it's just crazy to think in this little town of 2,000 or 3,000 people now that kind of looks like it's about 60 years beyond its time, that this Mercedes-Benz dealership was there in that day.
Huh. Wow.
No, that sounds like a really fascinating place. I mean, I'm always looking for suggestions like that where people can sort of tell me a great or a special area to go to. That's something that's actually tremendously valuable.
Do you shoot mostly out east?
I do at
this
point.
Home base, that would only make sense, I guess.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, some people have sort of said, well, I mean, America is a bit of a misnomer if most of the stuff is on the East Coast. But I've branched out quite a bit. And even with this trip, I've been, you know, sort of trying to fill in some of the areas in the Midwest. I've done a little bit on the West Coast and out in, say, the Four Corners. So it's I think, a lifelong project for me, and I'm always going to be looking for things.
So you see more books similar to this just going forward then?
Oh, absolutely. We're working on finalizing the details for the second one now, and I already have a third one kind of in my head.
Wow.
I see them as at least a trilogy. So I have a lot more material than is in the book. And yeah, I think that it's something I'll just keep building on, improving, and adding new places as time goes on.
You know, you mentioned a few minutes ago a word I was going to ask you about, Matthew, and that's the word, you know, sadness associated with some of the buildings that you're walking into, or maybe all of them. And these are abandoned buildings. They've been left to time and nature to sort of take over again. How do you deal with the sadness aspect of this, because these are empty buildings, not only abandoned, there's no people in them anymore. And how do you wrestle with that?
That's actually a wonderful question. I mean, I think the thing that is very important to understand when you're dealing with the places, and there's one of the kind of dismissive terms that people use is ruin porn when they refer to this stuff. And I think that they're
ruin porn.
Yes, I know. I think that people don't necessarily. It started off as really a critical slam, and then I think it got to be something that people just thought was kind of cute and funny.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they have that for a lot of different types of things now, if you're whatever it is that interests you. But anyway, the idea, I think, was just sort of fetishizing or making something all about the aesthetics of a place that's falling apart. And I think that what is critical to differentiate things from that is the idea that these are very real losses for people. I mean, when you go to a different community and photograph the factory, and to relate that to my own experience growing up in Hershey and seeing the factory, my father worked for Hershey. He didn't work in the factory, he worked in a different building, but I mean, that place was a part of my life. So you have to realize that They're tremendously important, and they need to be treated with, I think, a tremendous amount of respect.
But do you feel sadness when you're inside them?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, I enjoy the work, so oftentimes I'm really focused on what I'm doing. But
the technical aspects.
Yes,
yeah.
But there are a lot of times that are. I mean, there was one church that I was in as it was being torn down, and it was very upsetting because it was like, you know, seeing a work of art being ripped in two while you were there. That being said, there was and I'll have to sort of paraphrase the quote, Christopher Woodward, who wrote this book, In Ruins, that I really love, said something about melancholy not being an end point, but a journey towards the divine light of transcendence. And I think that, you know, this idea of learning and growing through dealing with things that sometimes are sorrowful and looking for the things that are transcendent or redemptive about them. There's a lot of beauty in the places too. So I don't necessarily want to just, it's like if you do a eulogy for somebody, you know, you don't want to just focus on the sadness of the loss, but also the joy of their lives and maybe what you can learn and take forward from that.
That's great. That's great. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Carl from Kansas City, Missouri. Carl, you're on with Matthew Christopher. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention, where I grew up, the area of northeast Kansas City, Missouri, at Lexington and Wabash, just north of Lexington, Lexington Street, in a park, there's an abandoned Kansas City water reservoir. Hmm. And as far as in my lifetime, it's never been used, but it's always fascinated me. It's surrounded by a big iron fence, and it's a very large bricks, you know, hole in the ground, but it's never had water in it or anything. It's kind of creepy, but it's sitting high on top of a hill, and it takes a pretty good walk to get up to it. But it's really a fascinating structure, and one that kind of tells, well, the history of the water supply in Kansas City. But again, it's never been used in my lifetime. So,
Carl, I'm just guessing that northeast Kansas City might have a few abandoned structures that would interest somebody like Matthew.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. All right. So that's Lexington and Wabash, right?
Right.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much for the call, Carl. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And one thing that struck me about what you've written here, you talk about the quantity, the mass numbers of abandoned structures. And that surprised me because, again, I think we tend to overlook them or look right past them so we don't see them. But you're saying there's lots of them out there.
Absolutely. And certainly we look at going back to the ruin porn thing, that originated with a lot of people that were kind of civic boosters in Detroit who were really upset with people that were coming in from out of town taking pictures of the buildings, and they felt that they weren't focusing on the urban renewal efforts that they had there. And you know, I could understand that to some extent, but, you know, there's a lot of people now that when they think of Detroit, they think of all the abandoned buildings there, but they don't understand or maybe don't think of the fact that, you know, certainly Rochester, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Syracuse, pick a city and you probably are going to have quite a few buildings. In fact, and then you look at the sort of trends that happen too. Philadelphia, for example, and I relate things to Philadelphia because I'm there, but this has been in many major U.S. cities from Washington, D.C. to Atlanta. There have been a tremendous rate of public school closures.
Yeah.
So that to me is something that's extremely significant and important. But yeah, these, like you said, these places, I mean, when you drive by them, you might not necessarily know that they're closed. You might not necessarily think about what it means that they aren't there anymore. But certainly using the public schools as an example, that's a tremendously important thing if you have kids, if you don't have kids. I mean, just towards our national identity.
You know, it's interesting, in a state like Missouri, he has dumped tremendous amounts of money into historic preservation tax credits for developers to keep these old buildings. And folks who work in that arena rave about this. We've saved so many buildings in the Kansas City area, for instance, that we would have seen disappear a long time ago.
Well, I think that's really something to be proud of. I think that one thing that you really see is that that's an investment that comes back to the cities, because people enjoy history. They enjoy what makes a city unique, and certainly
something
now,
different.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of You know, and there are people that would probably argue with me about it, but there's, I think there's a lot of sameness to some of the architecture that's going out there. And there's also...
Today you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And,
yeah.
Right. And buildings are made to be disposable. If you go to, say, a Target in Kansas City, it's going to be the exact same one that I went to in Philadelphia. There's probably not going to be anything different about it. So what is there that draws people to a city? I think it's places like that. And tax credits are a wonderful, wonderful way of giving that incentive.
Let's go back to some phone calls here and go to Susan from Lee Summit. Susan, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if the photographer would like to look at the old abandoned barns in Longview Farms at Lee Summit.
Ah,
I would love to. I mean, that sounds really interesting. Are you still there? Are you able to tell me a little bit more about them?
Yes. They built all around it, and they did redo the house. And it's all goes to R.L. Long, who was in Kansas City, a lumber person, and had the Kansas City Museum, and this was his summer home. It was a dairy. It was a self-sustaining summer home. And they have... you've done some of the things, but on the View High Drive, as you drive into Longview Farms, there are these two barns that sit on the right that are just abandoned, and it's really sad.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Susan. And then we got an email here from Karen who wrote us, the old Longview Farm buildings, some are in danger from housing development, although there's a push to save them. Finally, if he needs a guide around town, I'd be happy to serve. I know all parts of the metro quite well and am a big local history geek.
Oh,
there
that's
you go.
Wonderful. Thank People you very
volunteering.
Much.
Yeah. Susan, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, Matthew Christopher, again, speaks this evening at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. He'll be showing some of his terrific photographs at this event. They'll be on a big screen. Go to kclibrary.org to grab a seat. You can also go to his website, abandonedamerica.us, to view his photographs. The book, again, is titled Abandoned America, The Age of Consequences. And come back again once you've done book number two. It'd be great to visit again.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much for having me out, Steve. And I'd like to thank the public library as well. I mean, they've just been terrific, and this is really an honor to be out here with you.